Harato ho ratran tan kala lava visheshan abhiganavya graheshu viharantam prishtata eva paroksham anupravritto lobdha ka kritanto nata sharena yam iha paravidyati tam imam atmanam aho rajan vinam hridayam drashtum arhasiti, or something like that. Translation. My dear king, woman who was very attractive in the beginning, but in the end is very disturbing, exactly like a flower, which is attractive in the beginning and detestable at the end. With women, the living entity is entangled with lusty desires, and he enjoys sex just as one enjoys the aroma of a flower. He thus enjoys a life of sense gratification from his tongue to his genitals, and in this way, the living entity considers himself very happy in family life. United with his wife, he always remains absorbed in such thoughts. He feels great pleasure in hearing the talks of his wife and children, which are like sweet humming of bumblebees that collect honey from flower to flower. He forgets that before him is time, which is taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. He does not see the gradual diminishing of his life, nor does he care about the superintendent of death who is trying to kill him from behind. Just try to understand this. You are in a precarious position and are threatened from all sides. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Materialistic life means forgetting one's constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna, and this forgetfulness is especially enhanced in the grihastha ashram. In the grihastha ashram, the young man accepts a young wife who is very beautiful in the beginning, but in due course of time, after giving birth to many children and becoming older and older, she demands many things from the husband to maintain the entire family. At such a time, the wife becomes detestable to the very man who accepted her in her younger days. One becomes attached to the grihastha ashrama for two reasons only. The wife cooks palatable dishes for the satisfaction of her husband's tongue, and she gives him sexual pleasure at night. A person attached to the grihastha ashram is always thinking of these two things, palatable food and sex enjoyment. The talks of the wife, which are enjoyed as a family recreation, and the talks of the children, both attract a living entity. He thus forgets that he has to die someday and has to prepare for the next life if he wants to be put into a congenial body. Paragraph. The deer in the flower garden is an allegory used by the great sage Narada to point out to the king that the king himself is similarly entrapped by such surroundings. Actually, everyone is surrounded by such family life, which misleads one. The living entity thus forgets that he has to return home back to Godhead. He simply becomes entangled in family life. Prahlad Maharaj has therefore hinted, not just a hint, it's pretty blatant. Hitvatmapatam griham andakupam vanam gato yad dharam ashriyeta. Family life is considered a blind well. Anda kupam, into which a person falls and dies without help. Prahlad Maharaj recommends that while one's senses are there and one is strong enough, he should abandon the grihastha ashram and take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, going to the forest of Vrindavan. According to Vedic civilization, one has to give up family life at a certain stage, the age of 50, take vanaprastha, and eventually remain alone as a sannyasi. That is the prescribed method of Vedic civilization, known as varnashram dharma. When one takes sannyas, after enjoying family life, he pleases the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Paragraph. One has to understand one's position in family or worldly life. That is called intelligence. One should not remain always trapped in family life to satisfy his tongue and genitals in association with a wife. In such a way, one simply spoils his life. According to Vedic civilization, it is imperative to give up the family at a certain stage by force, if necessary, period. Unfortunately, so-called followers of Vedic life do not give up their family, even at the end of life, unless they are forced by death. There should be a thorough overhauling of the social system, and society should revert to the Vedic principles, that is, the four varnas and four ashramas. End of purport. It's interesting that Prahlad Maharaj is saying the same thing as Narada is saying. Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to his classmates. Narada is speaking to a king, and the king has to hear an allegory. Allegories are told when one doesn't have the capacity to, is too much attached to some other idea, so something allegorical is told. Just gives some indication of the position of King Prajinibari. And also gives some indication of how, as followers of Narada Muni, we sometimes need to tell people stories so they can get the message embedded in the story. In dealing with the 10,000 sons of Daksha, the Haryashvas, Narada wanted to test the acumen, the qualification of the Haryashvas before he invited them to move directly to a brahmachari position. And he also told an allegory, an allegorical place, that where there's a river that flows in both directions, and there is a whirling machine that has sharp razor blades, and slices anyone who enters into that realm. And somebody, he's describing the position of fruitive activities in the material world. And there's an option. There's a place where one can go that has, this entry is a small hole, and upon entering, you don't come back. Anyway, the Haryashvas understood very clearly. And they explained, this means this, and that means that, and the other thing means the other thing. And what you're telling us is we don't need to engage ourselves in fruitive activity and family life, and we should just go to the personality of Godhead, just from hearing the allegory, without the explanation. They understood, and they were ready. So don't be discouraged if you're trying to explain Krishna consciousness to some people and they don't get it, and they don't get it, and they don't get it. That's far more common than they get it. One of the assets of Srimad Bhagavatam is it gives us different messages and different methods of presenting that we can avail ourselves to, depending on the circumstance. And Krishna from within, he can guide how to properly use this resource, that resource, the other resource. In this case, it's stories. And what Narada is doing is he's taking stories. He specifically says, this is approved. Even when Shukadeva Goswami is in the sixth canto describing the story of Ajamila, at the very end of the story, he says, he references where he heard it from. It's we don't make up things. It's okay that, you know, to explain something, you sometimes may use some creative analogy. That's okay. But the standard ones are very nice. They're sufficient. There's potency in them because they have been given and accepted by previous authorized personalities. So you become conversant in the scripture, and those tools are there for your access. So, he's just given in the previous verse of a short allegory, and now he's already explaining the allegory. And then there's an allegory within the allegory, metaphor within the allegory. The metaphor is as the deer is in the garden enjoying nice grasses with his female deer, his wife. Now it's describing the wife to be like a flower. Now we normally don't think of flowers as, when they wilt, they're detestable. But what's being described specifically, Narada announced ahead of time that this is a description of fruitive activity. It's the same as what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, happiness in the mode of passion. What does he say about happiness in the mode of passion? In the beginning it seems to be very nice. In the end it's like poison. Very nice. Poison. So the allure of sense gratification is like a flower. Very nice. But it entangles one. The allure of sense gratification entangles one in very complex circumstances. We have all had the experience of spending time with someone that's taking interest in Krishna consciousness, and you know, you scratch the surface a little bit and you find all this entanglement and complexity. Wow. And this thing, and that thing, and the other thing. And largely they're looking for a material solution to a material problem rather than a spiritual solution to a material problem. It's, image-wise, it's like trying to adjust the shadow without addressing the object that's casting the shadow. And you're never going to be successful adjusting the shadow. You have to go to the object that's casting the shadow. But they don't want to go to the object. The soul has misidentified with matter, and thus the complexity and all the problems. So go back to the root. Turn the soul's attention again to the Supreme. Yeah, well, how does that solve my problem? Yes. I want to solve my problem. Minus Krishna. But minus Krishna is the problem. So how do I turn my attention again to Krishna? Because now I'm dealing with his problem. You know, so another way of that one is, how do I balance my time? And my answer is, there's no question of balancing your time. It's everything for Krishna. Not so much for Krishna, so much for Maya, so much for Krishna, so much for Maya. You may need to, how much time I spend in this arena of dealing with my worldly responsibility, that's okay. But that's not going to be even halfway clear unless there's a very strong, clear identification with turning my attention again to Krishna. And then so many of those things over there just become clear, or they just disappear. Or sometimes it seems, oh, they're getting worse, and then they get better. Just stay the course with Krishna consciousness. But one isn't going to be ready to do that unless the going back to what we discussed yesterday, the perils of materialistic life. I said, repeated what Prabhupada had said, that one of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to help the disciple understand the perils of material existence, the illusory nature of material existence. Don't continue to invest in illusion. Nasate vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. Real simple. Too simple. Too simple for the complicated. But you withdraw your consciousness from asat and invest consciousness in sat. There's the solution. The shadow, I remember hearing Prabhupada say this very, very early in my Krishna consciousness. When you looking at the sun, you see light. And when you turn your back to the sun, you see shadow, and there's not a third thing. So seeing the shadow, what to do? Turn to the light. Very simple. Same message. Nasate vidyate bhavo na bhavo. Ubayor api drishtontas tvanios tattvadarshibhi. The tattvadarshis, this is their advice. So another way of saying one of the principal duties of a spiritual master is to train the disciple or educate the disciple that materialistic life doesn't fulfill the expectation. It's a bad bargain. So another way is saying that a devotee is spiritually optimistic and materially pessimistic. We don't have hopes that this arrangement, the other, so many arrangements of in adjusting things is going to equal happiness over there. It's that by design. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's designed differently. It's a place of dukkha. And it's a fool's mission to try to make the place of dukkha a place of sukha. That's called the mode of passion and ignorance. It's not going to happen. But spiritually optimistic, because it's our natural position. It's our healthy position. And the merciful nature of Krishna is such that even we're weak. Krishna is very strong. Krishna's kindness is very strong. Krishna can carry us to him easily. We just have to be willing. And then the material difficulty. But the pessimism towards the expectation of material happiness is part of what Narada is doing here. As I was reading this, I was thinking, my goodness, one way of reading what's here is, who in their right mind would consider, this is a very nice verse, let me take up grihasthashram. And yet, most of our members of ISKCON are grihasthas. So what happened? Did they, miss this page or, just didn't hear the message? It's not just this page, it's abundant. There's chapters on the topic just in this little section. And Prabhupada, Prabhupada makes the distinction, the grihastha and the grihamedi. And so many things, when Prabhupada would speak about women, then he would say sometimes, this means non-devotee women and devotee women, it doesn't apply, it's not the same. So that's a compliment. Then the devotee women must be devotee women. I'll share a little Prabhupada story. This is from Mayapur, 1975, I think. I think so. It was a time when there were a number of sannyasis, Gargamuni and Bhavananda and some others, that were traveling around saying, grihastha life stinks, basically. And, everyone should just be brahmachari, and the temple, grihastha should get out of the temple. Bhaktivinoda, you remember? And, they were on a warpath. And it was creating, lots of dissension. They were making lots of devotees, and, and Tom Krishnamurti was doing a similar thing. So, then came the Mayapur festival. So, the schedule the Prabhupada kept was, of course, morning walk, and then Bhagavatam class, circumambulating the deities, ringing the bell. That was really wonderful. The devotees would jump as high as the ceiling, and it was... Anyway, and then morning class, and then prasadam. And we would go different places. We'd do different things. In the afternoon, in Prabhupada's schedule, there was sometimes darshan, because sometimes he had guests to see, and if there were guests, that took precedence. And other afternoons in that little room in the Lotus building, Prabhupada received devotees. So somehow I found out that several afternoons there was darshan, so I got a front row seat. And Prabhupada's room was behind, and then everyone would assemble, and then he would just come in and sit down. And very, very vividly, I remember Prabhupada sat down, and the room was packed, and Prabhupada looked around the room. And it was just silent. And I remember what my thought was. My thought was, we see our spiritual master as an entertainer. Like, you know, turn on the television and he's supposed to entertain us, and then turn off the television and go about and do our stuff. You know, what kind of relationship is that? So he didn't say anything. He didn't entertain us. He just looked around the room and nobody said anything. So there were some papers on his desk and he just started looking at the papers on his desk. And it was really uncomfortable. I felt like just, you know, slipping under the straw mat or something. And then one girl raised her hand in the back, because girls have to be in the back, right? So she raised her hand, and Prabhupada lifted his head, and she spoke, and she said, Srila Prabhupada, the men are treating the women so badly. You know, I didn't hear the rest. And Prabhupada just looked and turned to his sannyasa assistant and said, what did she say? He didn't address her directly. What did she say? And he repeated. Prabhupada spent about 10 seconds on, that is not very good. Then he spent about 10 minutes on another topic, which is, well, but why do the women dress themselves in very nice saris and nice bangles to attract the attention of the men? This is not very good. And if they find themselves in that situation, this is not his language, but, you know, are they not bringing it upon themselves by the way that they're behaving? Instead of behaving in a way that chaste women should behave, they're behaving in some other way, and so they're bringing some other situation upon themselves. This is not very good. They want to be respected. They should act respectably. Something, he didn't use that language, but that was his message. You know, when the woman spoke, there was this, yeah, you know, politics. And when Prabhupada spoke, it was, oh, politics got defeated. So, but the principle of being respectful towards women, they're to be seen as mother. And if you don't respect mother, then what kind of culture do you have? And then on the other side, then the mother should behave like mother, not like something else. So the way of life where one sees another as an object of sense gratification, like the example of a flower, whether it's the bumblebee or the person smelling the fragrance of the flower, if another, man seeing a woman or woman seeing a man or whatever, seeing some person or some object as an object of sense gratification, that's detestable. That consciousness is detestable, and it leads to dynamics in relationships that are also very, very problematic. And then, you know, what to do, because I've got this problem. The problem is you're seeing objects as sense gratification objects, and something for you to, you're meant to be the enjoyer of those objects, and it's not happening according to your plan, so you got a problem. The approach to life needs to be changed. In the metaphor, or the previous allegory, there's the tiger and the hunter, and the tiger is time. And I'm going to read what Prabhupada says here about that. Well, it's right in the verse. He forgets that before him is time, which is taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. He does not see the gradual diminishing of his life. The gradual diminishing of life means approaching death. He doesn't see it that way. Well, that's
the way the Bhagavatam sees it. Here's,
corresponding verse from the second canto, Bhagavatam, chapter 3. Shukadeva Goswami is speaking. Both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. One could say, well, devotees die too. Why is it not decreasing the duration of life of the devotee with the passing of day and night? It's decreasing. It brings this body closer to the position of being finished, but it brings the soul closer to reality. It's the closer and closer and closer we're getting to eternal life. If the day passing of time is used discussing the topics of Krishna. And for one who doesn't discuss the topics of Krishna, but tries to instead fill the time with pursuing enjoyment through the senses, contacting sense objects, then through the passage of time, one is closer and closer and closer simply to death. What's the profit? I'm closer to death. And experiencing pangs of material misery as I'm getting closer and closer to death. So that's the pessimism towards material enjoyment. Now, is there an option? Yes. That's what Narada wants King Prajini Mahari to take. So one of those options is give up your family life. And, you know, in a classic way, one can say in a radical way, but give up family life and take up vanaprastha life. Have you noticed the same thing that I've noticed, that there's not a lot of brahmacharis in ISKCON, but there's some brahmacharis in ISKCON. There's a lot of householders, and there's some sannyasis. How many vanaprasthas are there? Like 3 ashrams. There's some, but it's not an abundant ashram. Something happens to grihasthas when they finish grihastha life. There was a period of time when our beloved Jayadvaita Swami was on a warpath and went to Alachua and let him have it. You know, you come to your retirement village in Alachua, and you know you've done your service, and now what are you supposed to do? Just enjoy your grandchildren and material life, or are you to enter into a vanaprastha ashram? He was really promoting it. Somehow, it didn't get traction because there's strong attachment, as is described. Once in that situation, it's very difficult to get out of that situation. And in materialistic society, the whole of student life is just seen as a preparation so you can have a degree, so you can have a job and support a family. It's all family, 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 and die. And then who knows where one's going if you misuse the opportunity of the human form of life. The purport Prabhupada is indicating that those who are grihasthas that don't see they have to prepare for the next life, they're just indulging themselves in sense gratification and complacency in materialistic family life. So devotees who take up household life should, this is not just for brahmacharis to say, whoa, I'm not going to go into that ashram. It's for householders, grihasthas, who can understand while I'm in the family life, it's not flower smelling that's my program. It's purifying my existence so that I can move on to the vanaprastha stage and sannyas stage. Do my duties in this ashram, fulfill them nicely, move on to the next ashram, fulfill them nicely, move on to the next ashram. Progressively. And so, in conclusion, factoring in the purpose of grihastha ashram is license for sense gratification, that's not what it is. And if one thinks that way, then one isn't going to spiritually progress. If the purpose of grihastha ashram is two souls assisting one another to advance in spiritual life is nivritti, progressively diminishing involvement in the material energy, which is a little contradictory when you consider what grihastha ashram is, but devotees that are clear what the purpose of human life is, they'll also be clear what the purpose of grihastha ashram is, and they can move towards progressively diminishing material involvement. That's the goal. And decreasing material involvement means freeing one's time for direct spiritual activity progressively. And we have a number of nice examples in this community and, you know, a number of communities where they're setting a standard of what grihastha life really is. And it's an enormous service because it shows as an example to others who are not acquainted with Krishna consciousness, this is what it looks like. Some of them are with children, some of them are without children. And like I mentioned yesterday, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur saying, if I can produce God-conscious child, I'll produce hundreds of them. Of course, he was a sannyasi and Naishtika Brahmachari. But the principle of family life is not repulsive. The principle of sense gratification is repulsive. And setting an example, it's strong preaching to set an example for others. This is what it looks like. This is how you do it. I had forgotten this, but Hey Monkey and Nityananda Pran are not here. They reminded me some time ago, some years ago, they were in a position of debating whether they should just dedicate themselves fully in devotional service or have a child. And my comment in their particular case, this is not for everybody, but in their particular case, people can relate, those who are the audience that we're speaking to can relate better to someone that has a child than someone that says, oh, you don't have a child, you don't know what it's like, and no, we don't have time, and so on and so forth and so on. So with that, they conceived a child. And with their nice son showing how you can practice Krishna consciousness very enthusiastically. And whether with a child or without a child, or with children without children, setting the example as a brahmachari, as a sannyasi, or as a grihastha, a life that's not a life of sense gratification, but a life of dedication of whatever the resource that Krishna has given, ashram appropriate, in service to Krishna. Then, like, you know, the book distributors or Harinam devotees that meet people that they can see, wow, this is what it looks like. This is a happy person who's just loves what he's doing, or she loves what they're doing, and they're very happy, and so being examples is in itself very strong preaching, and it's very attractive. Without sense gratification. But using the senses fully in service to Krishna, which may look like sense, like, you know, chanting and dancing. And remember the last time I was here in Chicago, it was around the Festival of the Holy Name time. in the end of the beginning of July, and someone had come to the temple for the first time, and they were from some other religion. Ah, I remember it was. It was the Rath Yatra. We're down by the lakefront, and there was some middle-aged lady, and she had, you know, she just came over and sat next to me and wanted to talk. She's one of those kind of people. She was reading this one, that one. Have you read this thing? Have you read that thing? You know, because she's like, I'm a spiritual person, and I read lots of spiritual things, and, you know, why don't you hear from me about my spiritual readings? And so I just gestured to the devotees in front of the stage. I said, have you ever seen anything like this before? She looked. She said, it's pretty remarkable. Said, these people are very joyful. They're just singing God's name and dancing joyfully, and they can do it for hours. They've been doing it for hours, and they're doing it for hours again. That says something, doesn't it? It's not just this idea, that idea. It's a very joyful life. And in that very joyful, when you're feeling that satisfaction within, genuinely on the spiritual platform, the attraction for sense gratification just fades. Plus the teachings that remind us the peril of sense gratification. So whatever our situation is, whatever is most suited for us to progress further in Krishna consciousness, nasate vijite vavo nabhava vijite sataha. Follow that principle. Strive for that which is eternal. Invest in that. Withdraw consciousness from the other. Invest in that which is eternal. That's progressive spiritual life. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. I have a couple of questions. I want to also first glorify our grihasthas in this community, because many brahmacharis who have passed through here over the last 2 years have had somewhat of a stereotypical idea of grihastha ashram, tending toward the negative side of it. And after seeing our devotees in this community, their whole idea got changed just by seeing the devotees serving here over the course of 2 or 3 days. Their whole concept of grihastha ashram became transformed. Mm. So I wanted to just offer that glorification for our grihasthas here in this community. I feel safe as a brahmachari in this grihastha community. So I wanted to say that as a glorification. I have a couple of questions. My first question is, you were mentioning in the beginning of the class how Prahlad Maharaj gave the same instruction to the kids. And I was thinking also, it's interesting that we don't hear about him so much taking Vanaprastha Sannyas. Vanaprastha, he was a king.
He became a householder.
Yeah. So I thought
that was children.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. Even though he speaks the same type of instructions in his own life, he actually accepted grihastha ashram. And we have many examples in Gaur Lila also of such things. So I was kind of wondering, that example, one might take shelter of that example as a reason not to accept a more renounced position in the matter of practically evolving their Krishna consciousness. So, because I'm doing devotional service and it's okay. So I was wanting to know how, I guess as an individual, but it seems that in the stage of conditioned life, to go through those four ashrams is more or less kind of essential to really come to the stage of real Krishna consciousness. So that's my first question, so maybe you can comment on that.
Well, I can say something on both sides of that topic. The one that's on, I'll do the renounced one second. So that the in Jiva Dharma, it's a novel, but within the novel, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is teaching nectar, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu a nectar of instruction, and you know, he's giving scriptural lessons. But the storyline is, there are two young boys, young men from Calcutta, and they want to go on a, you know, adventure, so they go to Mayapur. And there they meet these sadhus. So as time goes on, the parents, those of you that are Indian by birth. You'll recognize this one right away. The parents started panicking. Oh, my God. They're going to become renounced. So we better get them married. Hurry up and get them married. So there are all these plans and stuff to get them married. And, you know, they didn't want to get married. They wanted a, you know, they wanted the other. So they went and asked their, you know, the Mahasaya. And his answer, now this is, my reading is that it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's advice. But he says, in this age it's very difficult. Therefore, better you take household life and live it properly. Then on the other side. So that's like one idea, at least, of a general instruction. We'll go now the other side. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I haven't read it, but I know that Bhaktivikas Maharaj has spoken about it, that Bhaktisiddhanta was really strong about renounced life, brahmachari life. And his purpose was for the mission, to expand the mission. We must have full-time people that are doing full-time service. Otherwise, the mission isn't going to move forward effectively. So there was one story where the parents of one brahmachari wanted to come, and because they heard that Bhaktisiddhanta was visiting that temple. They wanted to confront him, and we want our son back. So he had the son hide under his cot, you know, and put a cloth down so the parents couldn't see their son. And he wanted his son, their son, to hear him speaking to his parents, how he spoke to his parents. Oh, you know, just like he's not here. It wasn't. He was not speaking the truth because he was there. He was there, right under him. But for the sake of the mission, that higher cause, he did like that. And what he said to his parents pacified the boy, the young man, that, you know, I'm doing the right thing. I'm following Guru Maharaj. But so, for the purpose of the mission specifically, and when given proper protection and association, then it's possible. I don't know what happened with that person afterwards, but at least in the position of Bhaktisiddhanta, that's what he did. Similarly, Prabhupada, for the sake of the mission, following Bhaktisiddhanta, he encouraged brahmachari life, sannyas life. Whether it was sustainable or not. Now, the times have changed, and now we want to do that which is sustainable. But for the mission, it was sustainable or not. I remember when Rishi Kumar was 21 and Prabhupada gave him sannyas. And everyone was going, wow, 21, sannyasi. And he didn't endure. Then there was another, from my experience, can't remember his name right now. Because I had joined the Hare Krishna movement from my association with devotees in Buffalo. Janamejaya is his name. Janamejaya was married. His wife was Taradasi. So Taradasi left the temple, and then Prabhupada was considering Janamejaya for sannyas, you know, early 20s. And then Prabhupada was considering giving him the service of going to Atlanta and starting a center in Atlanta as a sannyasi, because Prabhupada had previously done that with four other sannyasis. Anyway, so Taradasi decided she would go back and be with her husband. So instead of sannyasi, became a grahastha. But it was, you know, in that short period of time, it was grahastha, sannyas, grahastha. It was expansive. The mood was expanding the Hare Krishna movement. And after then, it was boil the milk. Okay, enough expansion, boil the milk. So So there were periods of time when Prabhupada did like that. But then he saw, as you know, that boys and girls, they like to mix, and so I have to get them married. And he saw that was disaster too, you know, without proper training. And so proper training grihastha, proper training brahmachari. So now back to what you had said. As an individual, my advice for an individual who's considering what is the proper ashram, look inside and see what's my nature and watch that over a period of time. And, you know, under guidance and watch it over a period. If it's my nature to be, and if I'm, nature means I'm contented. Prabhupada's description of a brahmachari is little prasadam, lots of devotional service, hearing and chanting, and at the end of the day, he lies down in 6 feet of space and says, ah, this is the life. That's brahmachari. And one who has that sense of satisfaction, brahmachari is suited. And the one who is considering, should I or shouldn't I, should I or shouldn't I, brahmachari doesn't do that. But partly should I, shouldn't I, has to do with our conditioning, our contaminated association. And being in the right kind of association, then it's, this is the life. So we have to create that atmosphere where someone can come and experience that and find out if, this is the life. So it's individual, as you said I would probably say, I'm saying, it's individual. We have things that encourage on both ends. Now what about me as an individual? Situate oneself in the right association for some period of time, like an incubation period, and look inside and see, and take the advice of others that are observing and see. And then that's the decision. You know, if I'm dissatisfied, I'm uncomfortable, I'm restless, my mind is thinking, this is another Prabhupada statement, as the brahmachari goes and preaches and he sees worldly people doing worldly things thinking, maybe I'm missing out. That's not brahmachari. But they're satisfied within. They're actually carrying the mission as Narada is doing with an attached king. He's not, you know, becoming attracted. Oh, boy, this looks like really nice. Nice big seat and comfortable bedstead and nice food and, yeah. That's not Narada. So a brahmachari isn't thinking I'm missing out. He's very clear from the process of hearing and chanting and his association and so forth. They're carrying forth a mission from transcendence to the worldly realm, and they're satisfied in that missionary mood. That's the instrument mood, the humble servant mood. So it's individual.
This is a short...
Second question.
Yeah, second question. Okay. And within the Grihastha Ashram, for proper purification to take place, how essential is that give 50% principle?
How is it what?
How essential is the give 50% principle which Srila Prabhupada has repeatedly spoken about in his books for gaining proper purification within that ashram?
You know, 50% of one's earnings, that question? Gee whiz. You know, even to approach the question in a serious way, I've been involved in discussions with sannyasis and grihastas mixed on this topic, you know, good grihastas. And some will say it's not possible, and some will say it's possible. Some will say, you know, so many things. I see that there's grihastas that are advancing in Krishna consciousness that are not following that principle. You know, then it gets into, you know, 50% of what? 50% of the gross, 50% of the net, 50% of what? After expenses, discretionary funds, 50%. Because it seems like, because the discussion goes, that's the Rupa Goswami rule. He's retiring. This was the 50% of what's left. He distributed 25, 25, and 50 when he was entering into renounced life. So is it 50, 50% of what? Yeah, he's pretty unique. Pretty unique. And, it's like simple living, high thinking. We have all these nice things that Prabhupada said about our rural communities. And how many people are ready to live like that? Living from the land, simple living. Most people look like hard work. You use your extra time for cultivating Krishna consciousness. It looked like a lot of hard work and no time for Krishna consciousness. And on the other hand, it gets very complicated, frankly. Someone, Malati, sent just yesterday some statistic, because she's in Cleveland for Janmashtami. So the Amish people, one of the places they're centered is in near Cleveland. So there, every 10 years, their population is doubling. And the reason is because somebody gave some whole analysis of this recently. The children are not a burden. They're part of the forest to cultivate the land. So they have big families. And they're very strict, but they have big families. And big families produce bigger families. It's a whole dynasty, the Amish dynasty, because they're living with the land. And I'm sure they work hard. I don't know what their sadhana is, but they're 50% of whatever they have. When you're living that way, it's not so much wealth as the production. They pay their taxes. They pay their taxes like anybody else pays their taxes. They have some income. They sell their stuff they grow, and they're really good at with their hands. Gita Nagari has engaged them. Those two guest houses, they were built by the Amish people because, they have the skill. They do it by hand and they get the material. I don't know how they do it. If we go get the materials and put it there and they just put it together, or they get their buggies and, go get the materials and put it there. But they receive money, but, it's land-based. So 50% in the modern situation, there's all these discussions that go all over the place. So what we've been doing on the GBC level is saying, Anutama is the principal one that's been pushing this. Pushing it. Cheerleading, championing the message that at least 10% of the gross, and those who are householders have some sense, it should be given to ISKCON, given to missionary work, to be in good standing. Tithing. And that's, at least that. So your question was, how important is the 50% rule in order to make spiritual progress? I see devotees making spiritual progress that aren't, putting things on a pan scale and it has to be 50% or I'm not going to make spiritual progress. Their heart is into giving to Krishna what they can, and they do that, and they do it in different ways. So that's a long, not clear and crisp and sharp answer. You had something? You forgot it? Okay. Goloka.
Is online question related to today's?
There's an online question. Okay. I thought it was going to be your question.
It's an online question.
Okay, go ahead.
He wrote yesterday that this verse and next verse indicate strong potential dangerous situation of a person in grihastha ashram without being Krishna consciousness, and next verse strongly suggests and says that one must leave family life and take vanaprastha and eventually remain alone as a sannyasi. Next verse is also saying that this prescribed method of Vedic civilization known as varnashram dharma, when one takes sannyas after enjoying family life, he pleases the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Does this means that those who follow the Varna Ashram and takes up to sannyas order will eventually go back to Godhead? Please also enlighten the faith of those people who follow Varna Ashram Dharma, take up to sannyas order without practicing Krishna consciousness like Mayavadis.
The second part is clear. The first one is the direct going from brahmachari to sannyas is Vedic. It's something that Prabhupada authorized and oversaw. It's not like he was cutting the legs of those that didn't go through the ashram, grihastha ashram. So either way, and the either way, which of the either ways depends upon one's nature. This is suited for one person, that's suited for another person, provided they're properly situated in their ashram and performing their duties according to their nature within their ashram. And then the first one, could you, without reading it, just like summarize what they're asking? He'll summarize what they're asking. Go ahead. Yeah. Are they better off? Oh, as a Mayavadi. Oh, that's easy. The answer is no. Because back to Godhead means taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. Without taking shelter of the personality of Godhead, you go back to Godhead. And then the first one, is it guaranteed they'll go back to Godhead? No. The guarantee is full surrender to Krishna. So just not going through the ashram. It's not a vending machine. Put in your quarters and pull the lever and yes. One more question. Here comes the microphone.
Okay, so in our Krishna con, in ISKCON especially, there's some very wonderful grihastha leaders.
Yes.
And in particular, I guess I shouldn't say his name.
You have a favorite one?
Well, two favorite ones. One is His Grace Sankarshan Prabhu.
Okay.
And His other grace is Vaisheshika Prabhu.
Another one is Burijan Prabhu.
I've never met him.
He's fantastic.
So I've got the association. And I asked Sankarshan this question about taking sannyas. And because, of course, he's a really fixed up grihastha. I mean, they're vanapras. He says he's never even embraced his wife before. And anyways, so I asked him, well, is it your duty to take sannyas now? Basically, that was the gist of the question.
Okay,
and his answer was that if you have a fully Krishna-conscious wife, then there is no reason to take sannyas. So that was one of the questions. And also, if you could address, you see a couple really, two in particular, I won't say the names, but they've been brahmachari for, say, 30 years. And then they've come to the age of late 30s or early 40s, and now they get married. And we hear from Veda culture that if you take marriage at this late of...
If you do what? Speak slower?
Sorry. According to Veda culture, marriage should be from, say, 24 to whatever it is, you know, 35 or something. Oh, that's yeah, the prime.
That's speculation. Excuse me.
Okay. Well, sorry. I'm speculating then. Yeah. But so, anyways, they're taking marriage life very late in life. Is that appropriate?
When Prabhupada speaks of in Vedic culture, the young boy and the young girl were married pre-puberty. They didn't know what the heck was going on. They just got married, and they didn't live with their wife, husband, but they were married, and that's Vedic culture. So, does that torpedo the rest of your question?
No, the question is why is it okay to say brahmacharya as long as you can, and then 45, I want to get married. Well,
yeah, it happens. So what's your question? Is that weird, or is that standard, or what's your question? What's your question? Just get to the point. What's the question?
It wasn't right. But should we say, okay, I'm just going to take grahastha because I'm probably going to take it 30 years from now anyways, you know? Or should we say, I'm just going to stay brahmacharya as long as I can?
Can you help me? I don't get it. You get whiplash. This is a brahmachari question. When I see that happening, I think, maybe that would happen to me, so better I get married now so that I don't go through whiplash at 45. You know, gee whiz. Huh? It comes up all the time. You know, maybe you can ask Sankarshan Das Adhikari, where does the scriptural reference for what you repeated that he said? Okay, great. but if the statement is, when one's wife is Krishna conscious, one need not take sannyas, I would like to know what the scriptural reference is for that. Because I don't recall ever coming across something like that. I recall when you reach a certain age, you take sannyas. You enter vanaprastha, and then after some time you take sannyas. That's all I recall hearing, not the other. Now, the whiplash program, my advice to such a brahmachari who's looking at the whiplash program, and, you know, maybe I should get married now rather than go through the whiplash program, be very secure. Be very diligent in your Krishna consciousness, your brahmachari life. And under proper guidance, as well as your own vigilance, if you see there are such tendencies, not just tendencies, but let's say a dissatisfaction, because the conditions, the bodied conditioned soul, there's pushings, attractions and repulsions and all that stuff going on. If I see that I'm just not satisfied, there's, you know, an itching and I want to scratch the itch, then don't pretend. But if that were to happen to me as a young brahmachari, and I'm 45, if I've done my proper diligence in brahmachari life, by the time I'm 45, it's not romance, it's something else, if that's what happens. And then I'm more qualified to and fit to properly serve in that ashram than I would if I just jumped into that ashram right now. Better than jumping is make the ambience and the support structure within the brahmachari ashram proper. And apply myself properly and look within myself and stay under proper guidance and go that path rather than jumping. That would be my advice. And then it's not jumping. Then it's, well, it's just suited for you. Or that's suited for you. Yeah. Go right ahead. The agrahasta need not take sannyas. Can you show me? I mean, I can not right now, but no. Okay, nice. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.